Aloha, Mud Babies, pod people, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew. Hope you had a great weekend. It's nice to be back here in the studio
basement
this Monday morning. I have got a great podcast for you this week. I know I say that a lot, but this is really a good one. I have got, as my guest, Gavin McInnes. Now, a lot of you will know Gavin, and some of you won't. Gavin has appeared on TV a lot on Fox News' Red Eye, the late show that comes on at night. It used to be with Greg Gutfeld. Greg has his own show now, but Gavin is on there a lot. Let me tell you a little bit about Gavin if you don't know. Gavin co-founded Vice in 1994. His role as an editor at Vice led him to being referred to as the godfather of hipsterdom and one of the primary architects of hipsterdom. He left Vice in 2007 due to creative differences, and he has started an advertising agency called Rooster. He writes for several magazines online, and McInnes was featured in a 2003 New York Times article about Vice magazine expressing his political views. And this is where I love Gavin. Gavin is very much take back America, bring back men, where is the masculinity in America? Let's remasculate. Yeah, and that's why I have I hit up Gavin on Twitter to do this, and I'm so glad he has agreed. Now, in the interview in the New York Press, McInnes said that he was pleased that most Williamsburg hipsters are white. He also has been quoted as saying, "I love being white. I think it's something to be very proud of. I don't want our culture diluted. We need to close our borders now and let everyone assimilate into a Western white English-speaking way of life." McInnes later claimed in a letter to Gawker that the interview was done as a prank intended to ridicule the, quote, "baby boomer media like the Times," end quote. He became the focus of a letter-writing campaign by a black reader, and Vice apologized for McInnes' comments. Now, in 2009, McInnes convinced a journalist at the Village Voice that he had been knocked out after losing a challenge to an MMA fighter. The footage was actually an outtake from a failed TV pilot. In 2010, McInnes convinced a journalist at Gawker that he had eaten a bowl of urine-soaked cornflakes after not winning their Hipster of the Decade competition. The footage was actually an outtake from a collection of comedy sketches called "Gavin McInnes is a Fucking Asshole." In October 2013, McInnes was interviewed by the Huffington Post on a panel about the meaning of masculinity, and he said, quote, "people would be happier if women would stop pretending to be men, and that feminism has made women less happy." He explained that women are framing that toughness. They've trivialized childbirth so much that women are forced to pretend to be men. They're miserable. A heated argument followed when University of Miami law professor Marianne Franks responded, and McInnes, in his reply, loudly called her, quote, "a fucking idiot." McInnes was actually then asked to take a leave of absence as creative director at Rooster while they determined the most appropriate course of action. So you can see why I love this guy. He's a jokester, a prankster, and a thinker, and I like that. Let's get on with the show. Here is Gavin McInnes. Today, I have a very special guest that I am glad to have on Remasculate, a guy that I know that can actually relate to the subject of remasculation. It's Gavin McInnes. How you doing, Gavin?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic, and even better to finally be able to get you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I wrote you through Twitter, because I love following you on Twitter. You stir up the shit, and I love that.
It's not hard these days, and it's funny that I'm on your show, because I'm a pussy.
Are you?
Like, I can't change a carburetor. I've been in about 10 fights and lost 9. I like fashion. A lot of my friends are fags. But we are in a state of emasculation that is so bad that I'm basically Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino.
Ah.
By comparison.
And I think I relate to you on that same subject. I had a friend on the podcast the other day because I like to fish and do outdoor things, but I don't like football. So how does that – is that unmanly? You know?
Yes. Yeah, I like to fish too, and I suck at it. And I got to admit, taking the hook out can kind of freak me out, especially if it's a pike and it's got teeth. And in the 70s and 80s, I was not known as a tough kid. I haven't changed, but the environment has changed. And now the fact that, you know, I think women are sexy is controversial. natural. Even I talk to these millennials, and I know one who's a virgin, a guy I do my show with, a 22-year-old virgin, and to him, it's like he's never driven a monster truck or something. It's not a big deal, and it's a crazy thing to do anyway.
So it doesn't bother him or affect him. He just lives his life like I don't care about it.
Not in the slightest. And I lost my virginity when I was 17 and got made fun of for that because it took so long.
Well, the act didn't take that long. It just took you to 17, right?
Right. Yeah. The actual act was 8 seconds of heaven.
I think most guys don't even really remember the first time because you're like, I think I did.
I think the story of how I lost my virginity is a great example of how men have changed. Today, my story sounds like, you know, fucking the Fonz. And back then it was, all right, let's get this final straggler laid, this loser, this 17-year-old pussy. So, and a lot of us had lost our virginity to her.
Oh, you had a local...
By the way, she was, yeah, the high school slut. And I didn't know this, but she had lingerie on, all white lingerie. Can you imagine that's your first? Fuck. And she had huge tits. She was kind of chubby. Anyway, so they go, you better get up here and fuck her or you're never going to hear the end of it. So I nervously, you know, climbed in my parents' car and headed up to the country where they were.
Yeah.
Fucked her, fucked a living shit out of that bitch for a good 8 seconds. Showed her what ecstasy feels like for all those seconds upon seconds of pleasure. And then their parents showed up and we got dressed instantaneously. It was like someone pushed a dressed button. And I tell that to this 22-year-old. I was going to say this 22-year-old, but it's 22-year-olds in general. And they don't know what I'm talking about because they're still not laid. And they still live at home. Like, I moved out when I was 18. Today, that's called a runaway.
Right. I don't understand how people, like, I have a friend, another radio DJ, whose son is 17 and does not want to get a driver's license. Doesn't see the need for it. Can you imagine growing up and not living for the moment you got your driver's license?
Well, we would do all our paperwork, like all this classroom stuff first. So the second you turn 16, you're ready for the driving half.
Right. And that you're supposed to want that freedom of the road. I mean, that's what you lived for.
Well, and the other reason you move out when you're 18 is, again, for pussy. Like, don't you guys have nerve endings in your penises? Don't you want to get what's called a blow job? Have you ever heard of those?
What do you think is the cause of this? Is there something in society that is it in the food? Are they putting saltpeter in hummus? I mean, what's the...
They're putting saltpeter on the internet, and it's called RedTube and Pornhub. Combined with this innate fear of doing the wrong thing, we've masculinized women until they've turned into these bossy, bratty little bullies who might take you to court if you fuck them the wrong way. I mean, look at Mattress Girl. She begged a guy to fuck her in her ass. He did. And then she ruined his life because he didn't want to date her after that.
Ah.
So I think men have this sword of Rapocles hanging over their head. And when you combine that with a much easier way, just at home with the computer, you think, well, why do anything? And then on top of that, we have illegal aliens having done all their jobs. Like, we were cleaning pools and mowing lawns and smoking doobs and working at the gas station and doing scams where you don't write down each time you fill a propane tank.
Yeah.
And you fill like 10 and it only counts as one. So the boss goes, well, I guess a lot of people are bringing empty propane tanks. Whereas in real life, they tend to bring propane tanks at 90% because they want to be sure their barbecue is good, so they'll overcompensate.
Yeah, yeah.
So you end up getting $20 per fill, and then you only record one. Now you got like $100. So those little lessons, those little scams that you do when you're a teenager, those are what make you into a man, and those are what give you a drive. It's there's a reason I call it an economic libido doing these jobs, because it's directly linked to getting pussy. Getting pussy and getting money is what makes you a man. We've stripped both of those from young people, and the end result is just these sad, sheepish little fucking sad turds who are really excited when their dad says, do you want to go to Disneyland?
At 18, they get excited about that.
At 22, dude.
Yeah.
This guy I'm talking about goes at 22. They all share a room because they're cheap, and they lie on the floor of the dad's hotel room at Disneyland and can't wait to ride the rides tomorrow.
Well, yeah, I think...
How about you ride a bitch?
That's a pretty good ride. It's an 8-second ride, but it's a good ride, Rodeo Boy. I hadn't thought about that tie that you just made about making money. As an adult, I always said that, you know, that's all you ever do for women is you get a job because you want to have money to take them out. But I never thought about the beginning part of that, of what you said, of like, that's why we did work at McDonald's for French fry money, because now I had enough for gas to go, you know, pick up my girlfriend.
Exactly. Or, you know, girls were shallow back then. If you had a leather jacket, that was a huge deal. A fucking motorbike, well, you might as well just have AIDS, because you're going to get laid every 10 seconds.
Yeah, look at the font. Like you said, look at the fonts. So,
look at the fonts. It vibrates their clit. Well, they have a Pavlovian response.
Well, I've always said that's why women love cats, because a cat will lay in their lap and purr. When they purr, they vibrate. And
oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah. See? It's like a little tiny vibrator. But, you know, that's a good – I always hear like parents now go, well, I don't want my kid to have to work. They grow up so fast. You know, I was cutting grass at like 9 years old, making – that's how I was making money. And I just don't think people want their kids to work, and I don't understand that.
Well, maybe they feel guilty about getting divorced. I don't fucking know. But you should – your kids don't like you from 14 to 18. So if your kids are at home post-14 and you can afford boarding school, you're – that's child abuse. Now, I understand we're talking about upper middle class people here, but even rich people I know, they say, oh, I don't want to send him away to boarding school. I'd rather have him brooding on the couch every night, complaining and harumphing every time I ask him what's wrong.
Yeah, I would rather be depressed looking at my child just turning into a loser in front of my eyes.
Yes. Whatever happened to fun? Like, people don't understand also that hate and violence and darkness and danger and being uncomfortable and awkwardness, those are all an awesome part of fun. It's like spicy food. Like, it's not actually fun to eat pizza that has jalapeno peppers on it with hot sauce that makes you cry. But there's something about the pain that you enjoy. And when we go out there and we get in a fist fight or something, it's all part of the big package of life. And we've usurped all that danger out until – it's not fun anymore. Like, a pizza with no toppings is just wet bread.
It's a pita with hummus on it, basically. You know
yes.
what I mean? That's the food. Food has even become bad for this generation.
Yeah, they have those little packets of frozen yogurt and stuff.
Yeah.
And Ann Coulter's theory about why millennials are so short, because they all seem bald and short to me, and bald at a young age. And she goes, when I was a kid, the red meat was part of every meal. Like, your plate always had blood on it.
Always.
At some point. And now red meat is like a crazy treat we might try once every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But the meat thing might be are we taking that out of the diet so they're not as the anger and the death of the cow is not coming into us?
And you know what we should mention, too? This isn't very true of the South. I think in the South, they're still eating meat. I think the dads are still making fun of them at the dinner table and slapping them upside the head. I think the kids are still getting on a motorbike at 12 years old and going to shoot deer with the 22. This is really a Northern problem.
Well, I see it as a problem because I am originally from the South. I grew up born in Oklahoma, grew up in Texas and all this stuff. But I see it as the East Coast, West Coast problem that's trying to sandwich and crush the middle America. That's what I
yeah. –
you know what I mean? It's the
yeah.
California's telling us what to do. New York, East Coast is saying, why do you need guns? Well, because they shoot varmints that eat their sheep in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, Madison is just as bad as L.A. and New York. But you're right. The majority of America is probably relatively safe. I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for most of the Midwest. I don't know it intimately enough, but I have a bad feeling that virtually everyone north of the Mason-Dixon line – is a eunuch.
Yeah, be just beat, just balls cut off and beat down. Well,
and people say that to me. They go, who are you to fucking talk about being a man? You're a fucking hipster, pussy, fashionista. And I'm like, yeah, that's how bad things are gone. That's how bad it's become. You're supposed to want to beat me up, not be scared of me.
Well, how do you – I was going to ask you this question because I get it on this, because I'm a stand-up comic and I travel around and I've got to work clubs and I've got to make managers happy. And anything, sometimes I post stuff on Facebook that has lost me a gig. Like, a club owner will go, you know, I don't want that attitude. You know, you're too redneck. Do you worry about, like, losing work or friends because of this attitude? Because I've just got the point, like, fuck them. I have to say it. Because people go, just do your act and don't be political and don't – but if I don't say anything, it's kind of like, you know, evil triumphs when good people do nothing, you know?
Yeah, dude, you're talking to a guy who's lost dozens of jobs and millions of dollars from saying shit like this. But I don't have a choice. I mean, I learned at a very young age that when I had to go to the special class for being a class clown – that even when my dad would scream at me, I can't not say this shit. It's Tourette's. And I think when you try to censor yourself, that's when you get cancer. That's when you start rotting from the inside. But Sarah Silverman said once, she said, when I sit down to do a joke, I have one priority, to write down the funniest joke possible. As soon as I let exterior influences come in and worry about how this might be interpreted and who might be offended, it dies.
Yeah.
And she's – I mean, I don't love her politics, but she's been pretty relentlessly hilarious for a long time, and part of that is being incorrect.
I mean, yeah, politically.
Humor and rules don't – they humor and rules are adversaries.
Well, that's what I'm worried about in the comics that I work with now, especially after now Amy Schumer comes on and apologizes, you know.
Yeah, but in her defense, she's not a man. She's not – it's not Grant – she's not Walt Kowalski. It's not Gran Torino, and I can't fault people for not willing to die by the sword. I mean, if it was a man and he was one of these guys who purported to have character and he apologized, I'd be really disappointed. But this is a young lady whose career is exploding right now. She's
right.
Got to be the top comedian in America.
Yeah, and the movie is about to come out.
Last episode was brilliant. The movie's going to do really well. It looks hilarious. So it gets to the point of that size where to not apologize is going to cost a bunch of strangers jobs. So I get mad more at the culture that puts her in a position where she has to apologize than her actual apology.
True. Okay.
Although I think you and I, as men, are on a different set of standards, and I'd be much angrier at you if you apologized.
Yeah, because I don't think – I just have to say it. That's one of the – I got called in. I was doing morning radio here in Denver for several years, and I got called in for something I said, and they were like, we want you to apologize to the listener that complained. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm not apologizing because I meant it. And they go, well, you know, you could lose her as a listener. And I go, I'll get another one. I just
– big deal.
You know what I mean?
You'll probably lose more by apologizing.
I think so. And I always kind of – Stern said years ago that you get – you should be 50-50. Like people want to love you. They listen to you. And then the other half hate you. And then they'll listen to you because they want to know what you're going to say.
Yeah. I've always said with a good joke, about 85% of the people should get it and 15 should have no – idea what the fuck you're talking about, or even if you were kidding or not.
Right.
If everyone gets it, then it's fucking peanuts. It's Calvin and Hobbes, and it's not a humor for adults.
Now, speaking of humor, in this day and age, there seems to be a direction for humor that it doesn't really have to be funny to be laughed at in this day and age. I see a lot of like the alternative comics that just sort of have an idea. They throw out the premise, and then they get the response. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. They don't have the classic setup punchline thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they're too scared to deliver a punchline.
I think
it's a terrible time to be a comedian, and I don't envy these people. But I have noticed, I will say, a certain new breed of comic, especially here in New York, and I keep bringing up the Legion of Skanks with Big J Oak. What's his name? Big J. Okerfield, Oakland? I always forget his name.
I don't know.
Dave Smith and Luis Gomez. Dave Smith particularly is a political guy, libertarian guy. And I think these youngsters have realized that Big J. Okerson, sorry. I think these young guys have realized if we kowtow to these critics, they're insatiable. And it's just going to get worse and worse for us. We need to nip it in the bud now. And they are doing that. They're doing politically incorrect humor. They're getting away with it. And if you go to the Comedy Cellar in New York right now, you'll see totally politically incorrect material. Sherrod Small, Kurt Metzger, all doing stuff, really ribald ethnic humor.
Right.
And black jokes and white people, black people are, you know, all the stuff that was unspeakable even a few years ago. So I think there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, it got me in trouble. I've been politically correct for incorrect for years. Like I got in trouble during the Clinton time with Monica Lewinsky because I was going against all of that. And I was living in L.A. and working in Hollywood at that time. And I was up for a special on HBO and got nixed because the the women who were in charge at that time said, we will not give him a platform for his hate speech.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, HBO is all run by women and gays.
So it really has hurt my career. Like, people have said, you know, telling me, you're seriously one of the funniest guys, not to toot my own horn, you're seriously one of the funniest guys we know. Why haven't you gone further? And I do think it's too many years of me not playing the Hollywood can I suck your dick game.
Yeah, and that's really unfortunate. And it makes me mad at the culture that it allows for that injustice. But as far as a personal level goes, you have no choice. Like, if you tried to do clean humor and you tried to be Jeff Foxworthy, you'd go insane and you'd suck.
True.
So it's like Roger Ailes says. He goes, once you're yourself, you're unstoppable. You know, you are the message. So you can't fight it. You just have to make fun of everyone. And I noticed, by the way, when you do ignore the rules and you just plow forward without a second thought, people appreciate it in the long run. Sure, you make a bunch of college students mad and a bunch of fucking male feminists blog angrily on their little personal site that's about to get shut down because they can't afford the $10 a month. But in the long run, people go, I got to admit, that guy has fucking balls.
Yeah.
But what drives me nuts, last night I said on Red Eye, I go, like, let's consider the possibility that Bill Cosby's innocent and it was just the 70s and the 80s and people were partying and then he brought pills into the party. I mean, roofing a girl that doesn't know it and then fucking her passed out body is like a one step down from murder. It's really even worse than rape.
Right.
So before we bandy around an accusation like that, let's get the facts here. And then the narrative has been conducted such that I'm now saying rape is good.
Oh, yeah. Don't you love the twist, the absolutely spin twist that they will go for?
The Confederate flag is about slavery. Oh, I don't really have a problem. Oh, you like slavery, do you?
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I grew up in the South. I posted a picture on my Facebook of my Dukes of Hazzard lunchbox that I had when I was a kid. I got, oh, I can't believe you haven't gotten rid of that. You know, like, why, what? I'm not an idiot. It's probably worth more now than it was. You people have made my lunchbox double in price.
Yeah. Well, they've also changed the meaning. I had a Confederate flag shirt in my closet that I'm Canadian. I never gave a shit about that flag or even knew what it meant. Now I wear that shirt every 2 days and walk down the streets of New York in it because it means free speech and fuck political correctness now.
Well,
it doesn't even mean the Confederacy anymore.
I have – my girlfriend brought this up today because I totally forgot about it. She goes, what are you going to do with your Confederate coat? And I go, what? She goes, your motorcycle jacket. And I forgot about it. I have a motorcycle jacket that has the Confederate flag down the sleeves and a big one on the back. It's made out of deer leather. It's gorgeous. And I hadn't worn it in years because I got harassed about 10 years ago and I wore it and I went like, fuck it, I'll just hang it up. So now I've actually been thinking, should I pull that back out just to go, fuck all y'all? You know?
It's hilarious what they do. But the real question is, who's winning? Amongst my, like the Anthony Kumia Network, I just joined.
And oh, I love
got
that.
Those
yeah.
Comics I mentioned earlier, and we do shows there from his basement that get tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of viewers, and we say whatever we want. There's no worry about racism. Anthony wouldn't consider questioning anything that's on the show ever. If people have a problem with it, they can call in and yell at us. And so, on the one hand, I feel like there's hope here. There's these Adam Carolla-type pirate ships
uh-huh.
where people are fighting back. But then on the other hand, I see the White House lit up with a rainbow flag under the assumption that we just got gays marriage, and that's all that it was about two people in love. And we also get the Confederate flag pulled down based on the assumption that it was a slavery flag and it was on top of a government building promoting slavery. So is the narrative winning, or are we just – starting to crush it?
Well, I got shit for saying I went against the lighting of the White House with the rainbow because that was a slap in the face to Christians. I mean, seriously. And I'm not even a big church goer. I do go, but it's basically because of my AA. So, but that was a slap in the face to millions of people. Why not just light it up like the American flag and go, we all came together on this day?
You know, yeah, that's a good idea.
What?
Well, what we're going to start seeing is what we saw in Canada, where Christians, priests, the Knights of Columbus, they really tend to attack Catholics, will be forced to participate in these ceremonies. And out of all the venues, out of all the places you get to bake a cake or out of all the places you get to have a pizza. It's clear that these gays are going after these so-called intolerant Christian groups. And that's when you start to realize, wait a minute, I thought this was just about two people who were in love who wanted to experience matrimonial bliss. It's sounding more like a crusade now.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what was annoying about that rainbow flag. But you can't say that because the narrative is what's it called? Love wins.
Love wins.
So
hashtag
to be anti-against it, you're anti-love.
Yeah.
Who the fuck's anti-love? Shut up.
Nobody is. And I've even said in my act, I have a thing about I wish everybody could find love. You know, that's what bothers me about the gay pride parade. You know, if it was these thousands of guys in blue jeans holding hands, I'd be good for them. They found somebody. But when you're a 15-foot penis float shooting stuff at people in the crowd screaming, I'm just like you. No, you're not. So I don't understand.
When 8-year-old boys are twerking wearing tiny bathing suits and on the fire escapes in the West Village, men are fucking each other nude, you go, I don't understand here. What are you proud of? What is the purpose of this parade?
Right. That's to me, it's always just bad PR because that's not about your sexuality and your love for somebody else. This is, look, I'm a freak, and can't you accept that?
And the other truth here is how many people really don't want gays to be gay and want to fix them? We're talking about maybe, I don't know, 5% of the population. The only thing smaller than that population is the number of gays there are, which I think is 1%. When you go to church, they don't talk about abortion, and they don't talk about dinosaurs, and they don't talk about how gays are going to hell and how you'll be there with your pets. They just exchange goodwill and say, God bless you, and talk about being good to your neighbor and being charitable. And this evil Nazi racist hellhole that the left has depicted America as is so far from the reality we see when we walk out our front doors, that it's got to be only a small matter of time before people go, wait a minute, you're lying.
You've been lying. And that's, to me, I've never seen anything in church all my years of growing up in the Southern Baptist world of the South was nothing but love thy neighbor. And tomorrow we're doing a thing for the lady can't afford her food down the street. We're going to take some food down there. You know what I mean? That was church. It's not about every day. How can we ruin the gays' lives? How can we turn, how can we ruin people?
Well, the Knights of Columbus in Canada, where gay marriage has been legal for 10 years, they just got fined for refusing to have a gay ceremony in their recreation hall. I'm in the Knights of Columbus. It's an all-male organization. We have plenty of rules. It's a secret organization. We don't tell anyone what our handshake is or any of that shit. So they clearly were attacking the Knights of Columbus and calling it a hate group when most of what we do there is organize charities and get money together for the sisters and have charity raffles and fucking just do charity work.
Right. And that to me, that's what church is.
Yes.
So I don't understand.
Damn, it's frustrating.
It's so frustrating. That's why when a friend sent me one of your videos, I went, fuck yes. What? This is exactly – I need to talk to this guy. And then I started looking you up. And I'm like, dad, this guy is me on TV. God bless him.
Well, yeah, just the other day we were talking about the shooters and how the anti-NRA guys have depicted the shooters as a problem with guns and we got to get guns. And you're thinking – when I think of gun deaths, I think of Chicago, I think of gang violence, and as far as I'm concerned, the reason black men are murdering each other at such an alarming rate is because we gave their moms welfare, they dumped their boyfriends, they don't have a dad, and when you're sitting around with your mom on welfare and your grandmother on welfare and you haven't met your dad, you get bored, and idle hands lead to crime. Now, you combine the drug war with these idle hands, and you've got guys with an incentive to blow each other's head off. So the fucking left and their liberal welfare culture is killing millions of black men. Well, I don't know how many die a year. I know in New York it's more than one a day, and that is welfare and the drug war. Instead, we hear about how fucking Adam Lanza had an AR-15, and we have to get rid of this weapon that probably – killed as many blacks as are killed in an afternoon in Chicago.
And why don't they show more stories of people that actually guns have saved them? The women that have shot a rapist.
Millions of lives. And you know what they never quantify, and the NRA is one of the few places to do this, how many ethereal crimes were prevented just by knowing they're in a state or a place like Paloma, Texas, where it's going to probably play out real bad for them if they attack someone with a gun. I mean, the Batman Colorado Theater was known to be a particularly gun-free theater.
Uh-huh.
The church is obviously a gun-free zone. They're doing it at schools where little kids are at. No one ever talks about why they're choosing gun-free areas to shoot up. No, they talk about the fucking gun this over-medicated kid had.
Right. And you remember this story about – it was here in Colorado. The remember when the gunman attacked the Family First Church here in Colorado Springs? Did you know about that?
Wasn't there a female security guard that blew him away?
Yes. Yeah. So an armed guard.
Why didn't we hear anything about that?
Why didn't that follow up on that story? Like, yes, but this remember the story in Colorado where the armed guard saved the church? See? I mean, they don't – the media just sucks. It really sucks.
Well, they really have gone from – I think back in the days of Watergate – not that I'm pro-Watergate, but at least back then, I think journalists were tenacious and industrious and they wanted to get to the bottom of it. And they didn't start with the answer to the story and then fill in the facts the way Michael Moore did. I honestly believe back in the 70s, it was, I'm going to pursue this story. Something's up here. And then if I go, if the evidence takes me far 45 degrees to the right here, I'll just pursue that. I want to get this story.
Right.
But now it's these elites who go to Marxist cultural reform school. They get brainwashed into thinking that the problem is guns and rich white men. And then they come out and they just parrot these Democrat talking points. And half of their fucking segments are about getting more votes for Obama or whoever else is next on the ticket. And and they're so separated from the average guy. Like they've never met a fucking plumber. They've never been to a shitty action movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, they've never had a tater tot.
They've never been to a dirt track and watched cars go in an eight, figure eight.
No, they think NASCAR is where blacks are fed to lions in a giant dome.
Well, how do you?
In fact, they're so convinced that NASCAR is racist that they dressed up a woman in a burqa and a guy with a turban. I guess it's a Sikh and a Muslim are best friends all of a sudden. And they sent them to NASCAR so these people could record all the horrible vitriol and racist abuse. And, of course, what happened? They got a guy with a Super Gulp saying, how you doing? Are you sitting there? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll just sit here. How are we doing?
Oh, so it didn't turn out the way they had hoped?
Didn't quite pan out as head. And that's always what happens when they catch these. Like they had a guy, I think I can't remember if it was Daily Show who did this, but they sent two gays down in the South to get married in public. And one of them proposes to the other. And then they hold up their hands together and say, we're getting married. Guess what happened? Guess how quickly they were dragged behind a truck. No, everyone started clapping and said, congratulations, there you go.
Yeah.
They all have a gay cousin or a gay neighbor. They were proud of them.
Yeah, everybody.
Fucking assholes.
Well, here's the thing that bugs me, too. Now, you always hear the South gets shit on constantly. It's the South. Everything is the South. There's more racism in the North than there is in the South. Why does it stick to the South? You could even look at a map. I've seen that just recently. It was a map of the most racist states. You probably have seen that, too, going on the internet.
Well, it's funny being in New York because – all these liberals, they want black friends so bad. But the culture here with blacks and whites is so different. In fact, it's hard for me because every time I go to a room, I end up bonding with the black guy the best.
Oh, me too.
Because he is the only one who appreciates testosterone and bravado and honesty and calling people out and not being a pussy. So inevitably, I end up with the black guy in the room. And liberals here, they pretend they like blacks, but they only like a very particular kind of black, one with elbow patches on his tweed blazer who listens to NPR. So as far as New York goes, like 5% of the black population. And these guys almost maul them on the streets. They want them so bad. And the rest of the blacks, they have nothing in common with. Whereas in the South, everyone is with blacks all day. And you go look at a place like Charleston, which is about half and half, and they're always fucking hanging out and talking. They're at the 7-Eleven arguing about fucking sports or whatever. And it was explained to me once. They go, in the North, they like the blacks in theory, but hate them in practice. And in the South, they hate them in theory, but love them in practice. And in the North, it's the reverse. Now, I don't know if the South hates them in theory. I'd even question that. But every time I go there, I just see – I see the sort of utopia that the New York Times wishes it was a part of happening in front of my eyes all over fucking Georgia.
Right. And I think that when you grow up in a rural area like that and you're forced to live, and not forced is even a bad word, when you do live together and work together, you become friends. And so you're not there's not that division of that I see up north.
There is, but it's not an enforced division. Yeah, what happens happens naturally. And in Charleston, there are black areas and there are black bars and there are white bars. But in every white bar, there's like six black people hanging out. For some reason, you know, like this one black girl, she likes watching The Office and Game of Thrones, and she has more in common with these white people than the black people. Similarly, you go to the black part in the black part of town, and there's like seven white guys hanging there. It's like an agree to disagree thing where there's no animosity. And we saw that after the shooting. What happened? Was there race riots? No, everyone was holding hands and singing.
Well, here's my question that I've brought up a few times is, remember the 70s when we all came together and it was all like the OJs and the Spinners and let's get on the peace train and we all loved Hendrix and there was like, yeah. You know what I mean? But like the world came together.
We wanted to be together. And we didn't rub shit in people's faces. Like gays were everywhere. We had the Village People. We had Liberace. We had Paul Lynn.
Yes.
And it was clear they were gay. But it was like, look, don't ask, don't tell. You guys be raving queens. Do your Hollywood specials. And as long as you don't, you know, make ministers fucking officiate your weddings and make us bake you pies – we'll all get along just fine.
And wasn't that a period of time like we all did get along? So I don't understand what happened. At what point did the media spin? Did we change? What happened that we kind of went, you know, we're going to break off in groups again?
What happened was education became corrupt, and it became a brainwashing camp where they taught everyone Marxist dialectic shit about the racist hellhole that is America. And it started out really cool with the Freedom Riders getting beat up for equality. And then that ideal became something that the baby boomers wanted to mimic. They were so jealous of the Freedom Riders for being so badass. So they became revolutionaries, but there was nothing to revolutionize. There was nothing to fight against. So they just created a fake Archie Bunker world where we're all assholes. And then it got worse when the next generation came and they were these coddled yogurt kids who were told they're special. And now we have like the millennials have been brainwashed by the liberals who were brainwashed by the hippies. So you've got three levels of what is basically mental inbreeding. And now they just have – they live in a fucking unicorn fantasy land.
Can we ever
– remote close to society.
Is it going to swing back or is it actually too far gone?
That's the million-dollar question. I mean, if you sat here and told me that everyone that makes more than 100K a year is a lizard person, and if you cut their face, you'll see scales, eventually, surely, someone is going to say, I work in an ER. We had a rich guy in here. He had normal human skin. Like, isn't this fantasy world – doesn't it have to crumble at some point? When you're this disjointed from reality, surely some people are going to go, I don't know. I've met – a few thousand people over the course of my decades on this earth, and none of them are what the fuck you're talking about.
None of them are lizard people. I kind of have this theory of like I told you about the East Coast, West Coast pushing us in the middle, and it's sort of like when you tease your sister or your little brother for so long, they just turn around and then they punch you in the face.
Yes, that's a great analogy.
That's kind of what I'm worried about because both sides have been squeezing the middle, and finally the middle is going to go, look, just shut the fuck up.
Fuck you. Well, it's happening with comedy too. Americans love their comedy. You can take their guns away. They don't seem to mind that. You can take their freedom of speech away. That seems okay. But when you take their comedy away, they go, wait a minute, that's what I do on the couch after a hard day's work. That's now I'm pissed off. So then you start seeing totally mainstream liberals like Jerry Seinfeld go, whoa, 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 what the fuck is going on here? And they're starting to fight back. And I love your analogy because I'm thinking of my own brother. I bullied him my whole life and, you know, holding him down, doing that thing with the phlegm where you drip it down right above his nose.
Yes.
And suck it back up again.
Yeah.
And say, who is the king of the world? Gavin McInnes. And then I had to add, if I take it back, I have AIDS. Because he used to take it back when I got off him.
Uh-huh.
And what I didn't realize is I was training a ninja. And when he was about 16, he got me in a hold where I said, oh, you're a fucking dead man. You've got some balls. And then I went, oh, my God, get off me. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe.
He won.
And he stood back in horror because he had just destroyed his sensei. And I was equally shocked. Mr. Miyagi got his ass kicked by the Karate Kid. And I think that's what they've inadvertently done to us. And if you watch someone like Ben Shapiro debate liberals, or you watch Jim Norton take down one of these dead ovary feminists, or even, sorry to tout my own horn, but when I debate feminists, it's just like a cat playing with a mouse. They've been picking at us for so long and shoving us that we're fucking ninjas now. And it's so easy to debate them because they've never looked anything up.
Well, I watched one. There was a YouTube video. I think it was called You Debating a Feminist. I think that was the clip. But it was she couldn't do anything to you but throw out the liberal talk points. Well, that's a racist statement, or that's a sexist, you know, or coming back with that kind of retort. You know, she couldn't debate you other than just try to stop you.
Yeah, like when you say to a conservative something like, we're a nation of immigrants, they go, yes, I'm familiar with this argument. No nation is made up of the people that were there outside of maybe Africa. So the Japanese was stolen from the Ainu. Even America, I mean, look at American Indians. They look Asian because they came across the Bering Strait. We're all of various degrees of immigration. The point here is that it's a system, and a system should be based on meritocracy, and we're really a nation of immigrants, blah, blah, blah. But when you say shit to the left, like the figure that there's 12 million here is based on a 10-year-old Pew study. It's clearly
more. Uh-oh, your phone dropped. I think I lost you. Did I lose you? I think I lost you, Gavin. You're gone. Hold on, I'll see if I can call you back.
Basically, this idea of debating these people and how little they looked it up, it reminds me, I went to this gun debate in New York City. You can imagine how that went.
Oh, yeah.
And the pro-gun guy was from Field & Stream. And the anti-gun guy was just some gay guy who didn't even Google it, just strolled in and goes, well, this is going to be shooting fish in a barrel. And his first point was, these people call themselves gun nuts. So they're clearly aware that what they do is insane. And the guy goes, it's never occurred to you that there's a level of irony when people call themselves gun nuts. And then he started dropping figures about, as we discussed earlier, these deterred crimes just from the thought of someone waving a gun at them, or even knowing there might be a gun in the vicinity. And he didn't have a retort. He just went, why are we even here? I mean, whatever. And, well, you guys might be sitting in the winning seats right now, but all I have to do is point out that you have no clothes and you're instantly nude.
Right. The emperor has no clothes. I carry a gun. I have a concealed carry.
Lucky bastard.
I know. And when I first got it, my girlfriend was all that, like, why do you need a gun? Why do you want to carry a gun? Why do you... And then a few months go by, and we're walking downtown, and she leans over and says, "You got your gun on you, right?" Like she realized that, like, you know, it's not a bad thing to feel protected.
Yeah, I'm currently going through the paperwork here in Manhattan. It's a good $7,500 of lawyers' fees if you're connected to the
Holy
right people
shit.
And you have a good case. Upstate New York, you walk in, you can buy a gun easy. It's a little harder for a handgun, but I've got shotguns and 22s upstate, easy peasy. But here in the city, you're looking at 5 years in prison if you have a fucking splat ball gun.
Seriously?
Yes.
What?
And we still got a murder a day.
Yeah. And now, see, that's what people don't understand. They want more gun laws, but the gun laws don't affect the criminals. That's what they...
It's frustrating. And the gun rights... The anti-gun guys say, well, crime has plummeted in New York. And New York State has the lowest set of – it's in the bottom two or something. And you go, yeah, New York State, upstate, the gun laws are lax and there's almost no crime. But in fact, the biggest problem seems to be heroin up there, and that's big pharma. But here in the city, the crime went down because Giuliani started busting all the criminals. And the ones who didn't go to jail went to East New York, where handgun violence is fucking brutal.
Yeah,
you can't even deliver a welfare check to East New York because gangsters are smoking pot in the lobby and have ripped off the doors on all the boxes. Anyway, it's mayhem. I'd love to do this again sometime.
I would love to have you. I'd love to have you do this again. I'll come up with a couple other things that we could talk about for Remasculate and just do this again. Gavin, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, it's been a great time. And the million-dollar question is, are we starting to win? And the answer, I think, is how can we not? They're wrong.
We got to win somehow, some way, somehow. That'll be our next. That'll be our next podcast. What I do with you? What is the plan to? What is the battle attack to win this war?
Yeah,
All right, man.
Just don't shut up.
Appreciate
Keep talking.
It. Hey, tell everybody how to get a hold of you. Plug everything you do real quick.
So I'm on Twitter, Gavin _ McInnes. The AnthonyCamilla.com is where my show is. I have a column on TackyMag.com, and I have a video column on TheRebel.media.
And it's all great. Check it out. Gavin, I appreciate it. I'll be back in touch with you, and we'll do this again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye. Well, there it is, the interview with Gavin McInnes. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I had fun talking to him. I know he's a controversial guy. He will make you feel one way or the other, and some of you guys probably hated the podcast, but I hope you're okay that I'm trying to bring you all sides of an argument. A good debate is healthy, and America needs to do that. Not just shout at each other, shout each other down, call each other names. You know what? We're the United States of America. Let's unite. Let's get back together. Let's remasculate. All right? Until next time, guys, God bless America. Go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. I bid you adieu.